Jason, Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, here on this Thursday, and every Thursday at 9:30, we talk to our man Greg Wyshynski from ESPN, presented by ESPN Bet. Greg, I am losing my voice today, but we're going to power through, so I just want to give you fair warning on that, as the trade deadline is upon us tomorrow.
It is, and allegedly. Because
that's what I hear, at least.
All the action happened yesterday. Like, that was the craziest thing. These trades are happening earlier and earlier. It used to be a joke that, you know, by the time the deadline comes around, the guys on TV in Canada are spending their time figuring out who's going to be on the Olympic team versus actually talking about trades that are breaking. But it really is kind of a thing that's become more prevalent in the league, where these teams are getting ahead of the deadline. I mean, to the point of the two biggest name centers available both getting traded before the All-Star game, right? And then yesterday, all the action with Hanifin and Tarasenko leaving. So it's still going to happen tomorrow. There's still going to be a lot to talk about, because there are players available and teams that have assets to trade and space to take on new talent. But boy, a lot of business was done yesterday. Very busy day.
How is it that the Vegas Golden Knights always seem to have room to add at the deadline? I don't know how they pull this off, but it feels like every year they're adding something.
Well, they pull it off by having some bad luck, but all ultimately good luck, of having players that are injured. And you know, again, like, the report in certain media was that Mark Stone has a lacerated spleen. I don't know if the team's ever confirmed that. He's clearly injured. The problem is never, in my opinion, that teams are faking injuries or faking surgeries or what have you. The problem is that teams like Vegas know that they can keep a guy like Mark Stone on injured reserve through game 82 and then have him come back for game one of the playoffs. They did it last year. They're going to do it this year based on what they've, you know, picked up at the deadline. So that's how they do it. They're able to make the money work every year by having that LTIR space. But as far as like the cost of acquisition goes, it is kind of startling. I mean, the trade they pulled off for Noah Hanifin last night, for those who didn't see it, first of all, they gave up a prospect who's 26 years old. They gave up a prospect that's 1 year younger than the guy they acquired, which is nuts to me. And then the other thing they did was they structured the trade of the first round pick in a way that actually allows them to trade this year's first or next year's first in the next couple of days if they wanted to go big game hunting for someone like Jake Gensler, Pavel Buchnevich. So they did a really nice piece of business last night, I thought, in acquiring Hanifin. The rich get richer. I mean, Petrangelo, Theodore, Hanifin, Martinez, that's a pretty stout top four on your defense, and they still have the flexibility to do more.
The Predators have not made a move yet, but did re-sign Tommy Novak to an extension, so he's off the board. But what are you hearing on somebody like Alex Carrier? As I know, Barry Trotz has said that he'd like to get him re-signed, but if he can't, then, you know, obviously he's fielding some calls. What could the market be for somebody like a Carrier in a team that wants a defenseman?
Well, even if he doesn't re-sign, and you know, I think the question for Barry is, you know, does re-signing Carrier somehow maybe block the progress of some of the younger defensemen in the system? So that's something they're going to have to figure out insofar as like term and things like that. But I mean, this is a playoff team right now. And you know, the fact of the matter is that his defensive pairing plays the second most minutes of any pairing on the team. They're doing a good job. You have to keep your eye on the prize if you're the Predators and thinking that you are looking good for a playoff spot. And then once you get in, maybe you can win a round. Like, who knows? And I think if you deal him away now, you're really damaging yourself insofar as your ability to handle like Colorado or Edmonton or whoever you're going to end up playing in the playoffs. So I actually think they're in a pretty good spot. Like, on my big board, I think Carrier is the best available right side defenseman still on the board that has an expiring contract. There's going to definitely be interest in him throughout the next couple of days, but if the Predators decide to keep him, I think that's okay. Like, they don't have to trade him. They're doing pretty good for themselves right now.
We're talking to Greg Wyshynski, senior writer at ESPN, talking some hockey.
Greg, I tend to follow a lot of the Nashville Predators who have moved on, been traded, whatever. Ryan Johansson being traded yesterday, and a friend of mine said it this way, Greg said, oh, Ryan Johansson got traded to Philadelphia. And I was like, but there's a lot of meaning to that with something that's going on. I guess that just didn't work out in Colorado, and it's time to hit the road, right?
Yeah, I mean, they took a chance on him being the solution at second line center. That's a position they've been trying to fill ever since Nazem Kadri left as a free agent. And so, you know, they thought maybe he could be the guy and, you know, sort of revitalize his career, find his game a little bit playing on a team that maybe had a bit more offensive talent surrounding him. And it just didn't work out. And it didn't work out to the point where there's now speculation that when guys like Devon Taves are calling out their teammates about their lack of effort, do they think that we're talking about Johansson? Like, there's a whole lot of soap opera-y stuff regarding his departure that I don't think is stuff the Avalanche like surrounding their team when they've got their eyes on the prize. But the thing that they did yesterday, and it's something that I called on our podcast The Drop a week earlier as being a possibility, was the acquisition of Casey Mittelstadt from the Buffalo Sabres. Now, Mittelstadt's had two really good strong seasons for the Sabres back-to-back. He's kind of getting up there in years a little bit insofar as, like, you're going to have to start paying him for UFA years on his next contract. I think he fits really well with what Colorado does. And I also think that Buffalo did pretty good for themselves in getting Bowen Byram back in that trade to really build out a strong young defense corps on that team.
Greg, you talk about the next 24 hours is going to be chaos because of the trade deadline. As a journalist, let me ask you this. When the NFL does this, there are all these fake, like, Adam Schefter accounts and everybody like that, and people fall for that all the time. And I know you're a lot smarter than that, but you have to be weary, right, of like, oh, my God, what's going on there? And like, double and triple check sources because people love to get you, don't they? Like, I got Greg on this and all that. So it's chaos in a lot of ways, even for the guys who cover the league.
Well, as someone who has several fake Greg Wyshynskis on Twitter that follow him, I mean, I can tell you that is a problem. Again, the thing I say to everybody is that the easiest thing to do now, since our friend Mr. Tesla has decided to take away the blue check marks to validate who is real and who is not,
right,
unless you're paying for it. The easiest thing is to just click on the name. And if you see Elliot Friedman, you know, reporting something, and you click on the name, and this Elliot Friedman has 75 followers, that's probably not the Elliot Friedman that you're looking for. So that's the easiest thing. But also, two things on that. First of all, I'm a big advocate for media literacy being something that we teach in schools. I think it's really important now in this age of disinformation and AI and everything to really kind of like let the next generations know what they should look for insofar as like what's real and what's not. And I think there's a huge education gap in our society insofar as like people being able to do that for themselves. And the other thing too is like it is a lot of, from my perspective, it is a lot of calling and confirming. Even when another media entity reports something, I'm still getting on the phone or sending a text message to make sure that the details are correct, because sometimes they're not. I mean, one of the trades that went down the other day, you know, there was like draft picks that all of a sudden were part of it that nobody had reported. There was a Rangers trade yesterday where the initial condition on a draft pick was reported incorrectly. Like, you still have to do your due diligence as a journalist,
right,
to figure it out on your own and not rely on the reporting of others at the time here.
Let's also say this. Our good friend, the great Hal Gill, was telling us one time that the trade deadline passed, but he's like, oh, I'm good. But then they have to send it to the league office, and then like at 2:30 Central.
It's backed up.
Yeah, it was backed up. And then like at 5:30 they came to him and said, oh, by the way, you got traded. So because it's over at 3, correct, doesn't mean that it's over at whatever time it is, the deadline. It means things could still happen the next couple hours or so, right?
Yeah, but the deadline is just simply the time by which you have to file your trade with the league. And then these trade calls and the league sussing out the details of your trade can sometimes go on for another hour and a half. Like, yeah, I remember distinctly being in the office at times covering trade deadline, and I'm getting out of there at 7 o'clock, and we're just getting the details of the final trades. So you're absolutely right. Like, just the deadline is a deadline for filing, and then after that, it's figuring out the details. And again, the process is very lo-fi. I mean, both parties have to call the league. They have to, you know, double check that all of the picks that you're sending actually exist and the contracts are good, and you don't have a situation like we had a couple of years ago where somebody had a team on a no trade list, but it got traded there anyway. Like, all these little things had to be ironed out, and it does take a while to figure it out, especially when you're dealing with the salary cap and all of this, like, a cap hit sharing that we see between these teams.
So do you think that Jake Gensel's, that is he the big fish remaining?
Yeah, and then I think there's like going to be a little bit of a domino effect behind him. He's clearly the best player available. He's gone. I mean, he's not coming back to Pittsburgh. And there's about like six teams that are in the derby form right now. Kyle Dubas is keeping the price tag rather high, maybe too high for a team like Florida that I know is interested, maybe too high for a team like Vegas to pull off, although they do have those two first-round picks they could trade if they really wanted to go all in. Vancouver's been very, very hot for him. There's been my colleague Kevin Weeks reported the idea of like a three-way trade between Boston, Vancouver, and Pittsburgh to maybe get that thing done. And then when he goes, the other name that I think is going to be really fascinating is Tyler Toffoli of the New Jersey Devils, who is at a contract impasse with that team. I don't think he's going to be returning. I think they're going to trade him before Friday, which will probably signal to the locker room that they think their season's done. But he's a veteran scorer, top goal scorer on the team, has a ton of playoff experience. They're probably going to get a first-round pick for him. And I kind of see him positioned as whoever doesn't get Gensel probably goes and tries to get Toffoli as a backup plan.
Greg, before we let you go, Leo Messi is in town tonight to play soccer against Nashville SC. And I got a question for you that Chase did not even come close to. Any idea, Greg, how many followers Messi has on Instagram?
On Instagram?
Yep.
Ooh, I mean, it's got to be, I'm trying to think of like what the top female celebrities probably have. I would say it's probably in the neighborhood of like 200 million.
He has 500 million followers.
Okay.
Well, yeah, it's not bad.
That's clearly more than 200 million. and why not? And why not? I mean, like, he's messy. He's great.
Hey, exactly right, man.
Yes, indeed. Greg, appreciate it as always. Enjoy the deadline, and hope it's not too crazy for you. We'll talk next week.
Could he get a billion if he took an Instagram with Sidney Sweeney? Like,
he's got my vote.
All right, boys. Take care.
All right, Greg.
You too. Greg Wyshynski joining us from ESPN.